This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
states should look to find non-custodial solutions. And usually they are available. It's simply a question of politics, whether you invest primarily in the criminal justice system or you invest more in the child welfare system.
That's Manfred Nowak, a professor of international human rights law at the University of Vienna, on limiting the detention of children. Details coming up also. Severe food shortage may hit Cameroon's northern border with Chad and Nigeria because of violent floods. And elections are Sunday in Guinea-Bissau, where residents are hoping to emerge from years of political stagnation. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Cameroonian authorities say they fear a severe food shortage may hit the Central African nation's northern border with Chad and Nigeria. Violent floods that began weeks ago have swept away farms and grazing lands for cattle and killed at least 7 people in recent days. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Gobo in northern Cameroon, many people are fleeing to Chad to escape floodwaters.
Floodwaters sweep through Gobo on Cameroon's northern border with Chad, swamping farmlands, ranches, schools, roads and markets. The weeks of flooding have raised fears that a severe food shortage may grip the area if waters fail to recede, preventing farmers from returning to plant crops. Gobo-based government agriculture advisor Dennis Ngouimba says the damage is extensive.
Sur l'ensemble des trois régions, des millions d'hectares sont déjà.
He says the situation is very damaging to agricultural production as millions of hectares of land can no longer be cultivated. He says the consequences are potentially damaging to the area that has farming and cattle ranching as the main economic activities. A majority of the 80,000 people of Gobo are farmers and cattle ranchers. 42-year-old farmer Ahmad Sendi says floods destroyed food stocks in their warehouse. He says he and his workers have been able to cultivate only 20% of their farms since August. Sendi says Burun is one of the villages that grows the highest quantity of cotton in northern Cameroon, but that the devastating floods have not allowed him as well as other farmers to go to their farms within the past 3 months. He says rice and groundnut farms are completely flooded and their cattle are dying. The governor of Cameroon's far north region, Midjiyawa Bakari, says authorities are already thinking of how to help flood victims return to their farms as soon as possible.
Vous savez très bien que du fait de la nébuleuse Boko Haram.
He says while waiting for the flooding to end, there are plans to bring food stocks that could not be exported to neighboring countries and southern markets due to Boko Haram terrorism to the affected people who are already hungry. Boko Haram militant attacks over the past 6 years have led many farmers to abandon lands in Cameroon's far north region. Seasonal flooding has only added to the misery of those remaining. 40-year-old school teacher Shadak Abraham says floodwaters on Friday destroyed 3 classrooms in Gobo.
La majorité des élèves ne viennent plus à l'établissement.
He says both teachers and children fled the school after being inundated by floodwaters that killed a teacher and 3 children he was trying to save from the current. The floods also killed 3 other people in the area, says Sadak, and have been submerging them for the past 3 weeks. Sadak said it was not possible to know the exact number of children who died because many parents tried to take them to safety. The United Nations says 40,000 people have been directly affected by weeks of flooding in the area. The worst flooding in northern Cameroon claimed 60,000 lives in 2012 when heavy rainfall fell in the area for more than a month. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Gobo, Cameroon.
Elections are Sunday in Guinea-Bissau, where residents are hoping to emerge from years of political stagnation. Voters will choose the next president, while the international community continues to play a key supporting role in bringing elections to the public. Ricky Shryock reports from the capital, Bissau.
Supporters dance and cheer for President José Mário Vaz as he makes a campaign appearance in Bissau. Vaz is the first democratically elected president in Guinea-Bissau's history to finish his term. He is up for re-election but is facing stiff competition from several opponents, including former prime ministers Carlos Gomes Jr. and Domingo Simoes Pereira. Vaz campaign spokesperson Harry Mane says the president should be re-elected to move the country forward with needed reforms. Vaz's five-year term has not been without turmoil. When the president fired Pereira from the prime minister post in 2015, a political stalemate between Vaz and the majority party PGC ensued. The country went through years of no new legislation being passed. Regional bloc ECOWAS stepped in as mediator for the crisis and has pushed for sticking to the election date. Vincent Fouché, a researcher for the French National Center for Scientific Research, says they have been integral for the country to get to elections.
Clearly, the international community has been very important in Guinea-Bissau in bringing this election about and bringing also the legislative elections. And by this, actually, what's quite significant is that there is a very strong leadership by the ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, which these last few years has basically been enjoying the support and of most of their international partners, whether it be the EU, the US, the UN, the Lusophone countries. There's a sort of sense that, okay, ECOWAS owns this.
Pereira is now running against Vaz as the PGC candidate. Pereira campaigning in the small towns has promised better roads, schools, and hospitals to rural residents. Everywhere he goes, he wears his signature straw-colored fedora. The hat is known as Cholna Fria, which he says loosely translates to fresh air in local Portuguese-based Creole. He says it represents a break from the past, including Vaz.
We cannot afford to continue to have entire families. They don't have anybody to relate to in terms of literacy. So this has to be a big question. This country needs a restart, fresh air.
Of the other main contenders, Umaru Sissoco Embalo is the candidate from ADEM 15, a new party that sprouted up during the political stalemate. And Nunu Nabiam is the candidate for PRS opposition party, which usually enjoys the support of the Balanta community, the largest ethnic group in Guinea-Bissau. As polls approach and trucks drive by with music and slogans blaring from loudspeakers, most residents hope this election will keep the country on a democratic path and give it a functioning government again. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Bissau.
Officials say an airstrike made a direct hit on a bakery in suburban Tripoli today, killing at least 7 workers and injuring more than 30 others, including nationals from Niger, Egypt, and Bangladesh. The attack occurred in the Wadi Rabia district in the Libyan capital's southern suburbs, the site of numerous airstrikes. An attack launched on the city in April by forces loyal to Commander Khalifa Haftar has settled into a near stalemate. The UN-backed Government of National Accord, GNA, blamed today's attack on Haftar's self-styled Libyan National Army, which said it had no information on the attack. Haftar is backed by Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the UAE, while Turkey and Qatar back the GNA. The United States last week urged Haftar to call off his offensive and accused Russia of working to exploit the conflict. The UN says more than 1,000 people have been killed and another 120,000 displaced. A new United Nations study finds that more than 7 million children worldwide are imprisoned, institutionalized, or detained in immigration centers. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva at the launch of the Global Study on Children Deprived of Liberty.
In more than 700 pages, the study describes the suffering endured by millions of children locked up in prisons, abandoned and institutionalized in orphanages, held in migrant centers or other places of detention. The study says children deprived of liberty are among the most vulnerable, discriminated, and excluded members of society. It says they are victims of abuse, neglect, and exploitation by others. It says thousands of children recruited by terrorist and extremist groups are arrested by authorities and treated as perpetrators instead of as victims. The independent expert leading the study, Manfred Novak, is professor of international human rights law at the University of Vienna. He says depriving children of their liberty is a violation of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. He says the detention of children should be a measure of last resort and for the shortest period of time.
In principle, children should not be deprived of liberty, and states should look to find non-custodial solutions. And usually they are available. It's simply a question of politics, whether you invest primarily in the criminal justice system or you invest more in the child welfare system and support the families.
Novak says migration-related detention of children can never be considered as a measure of last resort. He tells VOA the Trump administration's policy of separating children from their parents at the Mexican-U.S. border is absolutely prohibited by the Convention on the Rights of the Child. He considers this inhuman treatment for both the parents and the children.
Children should never be in migration-related detention. So that means that should not be used as an excuse to separate the children from the parents. If there's a decision to deport them to the country of origin, there's always a way that they can stay at a place where they are not deprived of liberty and nevertheless can be deported together.
The study says children deprived of freedom suffer from anxiety and depression. Many have suicidal thoughts and post-traumatic stress. It warns psychiatric disorders for children in detention can increase tenfold during their confinement and often results in early death among children when released. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. An organization that assesses global risks has ranked 4 African countries as the most dangerous in the world. International SOS put together an interactive map that assesses risks based on medical, security, and road safety. Libya, Somalia, South Sudan, and the Central African Republic were ranked in the lowest safety band in all 3 categories. Very high for travel medical risk, extreme for travel security risk, and more than 25 deaths per 100,000 for road safety risk. Other countries graded extreme for security risk include Mali, along with Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and Afghanistan. Eritrea, Burkina Faso, Niger, Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Guinea-Bissau, and Burundi all scored very high for travel medical risk in Africa. Pope Francis hosted 1,500 poor and needy people for lunch yesterday at the Vatican. Earlier, he celebrated Mass in St. Peter's Basilica to mark World Day of the Poor. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Some 150 round tables were prepared in the large Vatican Hall where the Pope normally holds his indoor audiences with the faithful during the winter months. There he hosted lunch for poor people, including migrants and about 50 volunteers who work with the needy. Before lunch was served, the Pope thanked all those present and asked God to bless them and their families. The menu for all the Pope's guests was lasagne, chicken with cream of mushroom sauce and potatoes, dessert, fruit and espresso coffee. Elsewhere in Rome, another 1,500 needy people were also served lunch and in many parishes. Earlier on Sunday, the Pope celebrated a special Mass in St. Peter's Basilica to raise awareness about the poor in the world. The Mass was attended by the poor and the volunteers, who later lunched with the Pope. During the service, Pope Francis said, "The poor facilitate our access to heaven," and described them as the treasure of the Church. Francis encouraged the faithful not to feel annoyed when the poor knock on our doors, but to welcome them and help them as much as possible.
Quanti anziani, quanti nascituri.
How many elderly, babies, disabled and poor people are considered useless, the Pope said in his homily, adding that we go our way in haste without worrying that gaps are increasing, that the greed of a few is adding to the poverty of many others. The Pope told the faithful to ask themselves the question, do I help someone who has nothing to give me in return? Do I, as a Christian, have at least one poor person as a friend? The Pope, who chose the name Francis after the saint of the poor, has focused his attention on the world's marginalized since the start of his papacy. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Without improving food production and land use, the world may face unrest and conflict, according to a landmark report. The study by a coalition of universities and environmental organizations says current farming practices contribute to food shortages and global warming. One proposed solution is to rely more on insects as a food source. Some farmers in Kenya are already raising crickets to sell as food. Rod Elmandorp reports from Kisumu in Kenya.
We're in a farm in Kisumu in Kenya. A selection of freshly baked loaves of bread is displayed on the table. Nothing unusual about them. But there is a difference. This bread was baked using flour derived from crickets. 54-year-old Charles Odira is the farmer here. He's rearing the insects that usually are known for their chirping. And he says he got the idea to raise them for food after visiting a farming fair in Thailand.
When I went there and I saw how they were rearing crickets there, how it was helping the poor, the malnourished, how it was bringing income to the farmers, then when I came back, a cricket farmer.
Odira started with 50 crickets he trapped in the wild. Now, a few years later, he has a colony of up to 300,000 insects. They live in pens and thrive on chicken feed and plant leftovers. According to scientists at the International Center of Insect Physiology and Ecology in Nairobi, or ICEPA, crickets are good for human consumption. Tonga Chrysanthus is one of the scientists. He shows the trays in which the crickets mature and are studied.
Crickets are very rich in protein, ranging between 62 to 65%, which is superior to that of meat, which ranges between 25 to 30%. Insect protein will be very good for lactating mothers as well as children less than 5 years.
Odira has built a network of 100 cricket farmers, but there's a threat. A bacterial infection nearly obliterated the colonies in the whole region, and farmers had to start again from scratch. They are recovering with support of ICEPA. The benefits of cricket farming prompted the Food and Land Usage Coalition to propose raising insects as a way to tackle food shortages. Scientists at ICEPA agree, with some conditions, says researcher Supramanian Sivan.
But then the traditional food system, which was based on wild harvesting, has to be enhanced or improved with the new mass rearing techniques, with better understanding on the safety of these insects, so that it can be taken up by large communities.
And because of less intensive farming methods, crickets help reduce global warming, according to the Food and Land Usage Coalition. The crickets in Odira's farm are eaten, or end up in bread and cookies. Fred Odjambo is a regular customer and has various reasons for buying it. He says he loves this bread because it gives him more energy than normal bread. Also, he believes it increases his potency for lovemaking. And as Odjambo, for one, enjoys his cricket breakfast to the fullest, experts say it might one day feed many and help prevent conflict in parts of the world where the population is growing and food resources are becoming more scarce. Ruud Elmendorp for VOA News, Kisumu, Kenya.
The Ghana Football Association recently elected former sports journalist Kurt Akaroko as its new president. The 48-year-old Okoroku is tasked with cleaning up an organization that has seen its image tarnished considerably by a corruption scandal. The scandal led to league game suspensions and some football clubs closing their doors. But one club that stayed open is not only promoting football, it's also working to keep young men off the streets. Stacey Knott reports from Accra, Ghana.
Ghanaian football was stunned last year by a corruption scandal in which referees were found to be accepting bribes to influence the outcome of games. But while the Ghana Football Association has struggled to clean up the sport and some football clubs have closed their doors, the Shooting Stars Football Club has continued to train, house and support young players. Isaac Unser is co-founder of the Shooting Stars.
From a very small way, we're trying to make sure that football is still being played. In the last 2 years, most clubs in Ghana have shut shop. Why? Because you can't keep on spending money on something that is not being supported. It's not running. So footballers are sitting at home. What are they doing if they're sitting at home? They're going to get into trouble. They're going to be on the streets.
The scandal spurred many Ghanaian football players to take other jobs or leave the country for other clubs. But with donations from the founders' friends, family and some businesses, the Shooting Stars were able to help footballers like 17-year-old Emmanuel Chibafor keep training in Ghana.
All the environment are just good for a footballer. So you don't need to go outside to try and figure out, like going to look for money. Like they have all the food stuffs and all the facilities around there. So you don't need to go outside the country.
The team has helped the young men do well in exhibition games in Europe, even though many are from less privileged backgrounds with far fewer resources than their European counterparts. Some European clubs have even signed Shooting Stars footballers. Part of reforming the GFA was finding a new president. Ghanaian attorney Amanda Clinton was the only woman to run, though she was unsuccessful in her bid. Clinton says it is important to make sure all talented players have a good shot at success in the game.
Football has been a really good leveler, you know, globally. It's like the gladiators of our time. It's been a very good leveler for disadvantaged people where it makes a difference.
Shooting Stars co-founder Anser says young players need more support. He wants to further develop the Shooting Stars both on the field and through education. His ultimate aim will be to see a handful of his players in the international spotlight and better support for players who stay in Ghana. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.